Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 7, Text 1, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Shri Raja Uvacha Kasya Hetoho Parityaktaha Acharyena Atmanaha Suraha Etat Achakshva Bhagavan Shishyanam Akramam Gurau Sri Rajavacha Kasya hetof parityakta Archayena atmana suraha Etada chakshva bhagavan Chishyanam akramam gurau Sri Rajavacha Kasya hetof parityakta Acharyena atmana suraha Etada chakshva bhagavan Chishyanam akramam gurau Sri Rajavacha Kasya hetof parityakta Acharyena atmana suraha Etad achakshva bhagavan Chishyanam akramam gurau Sri Rajavacha Kasya hetof parityakta Acharyena atmana suraha Etad achakshva bhagavan Chishyanam akramam gurau Sri Rajavacha Kasya hetof parityakta Acharyena atmana suraha Etad achakshva bhagavan Chishyanam akramam gurau Ladies, please. Sri Rajavacha Kasya hetof parityakta Acharyena atmana suraha Etada chakshva bhagavan Chishanam Akramam Guru. Shri Raja Vacha. Kasya Heto Parityakta. Acharya Atmana Kusaraha. Etada Chakshva Bhagavan. Chishanam Akramam Guru. Shri Radha Uvacha. The king inquired. Kasya Hitoho. For what reason? Parityaktaha. Rejected. Acharyena. By the spiritual master Brihaspati. Atmanaha. Of himself. Suraha. All the demigods. Etat. This. Achakshva. Kindly describe. Bhagavan. O great sage. Shukdev Goswami. Shishyanam of the disciples. Akramam, the offense. Guru, unto the spiritual master. Maharaj Parikshit inquired from Shukadev Goswami, O great sage, why did the spiritual master of the demigods, Brihaspati, reject the demigods who were his own disciples? What offense did the demigods commit against their spiritual master? Please describe to me this incident. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. Saptame guruna tyaktair devair daitya parajitai. Vishvarupo gurutvena vrito brahmopadeshataha. The seventh chapter describes how Brihaspati was offended by the demigods, how he left them and the demigods were defeated, and how the demigods, following the instructions of Lord Brahma, accepted Vishvarupa as the priest to perform their sacrifices. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Shreshtam Manamapi Shachiputramatra Swarupam Rupam Tasyagradamurupuring Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tamnatosmi. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atah Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavanscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitantam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shivishakan Vijamscha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I'll now read the English translation of the next verses up to verse 19. Shukdev Goswami said, O King, once upon a time, the King of Heaven, Indra, being extremely proud because of his great opulence of the three worlds, transgressed the law of Vedic etiquette. Now there's a description of Indra in his court. So just, you can try to visualize it, his massive opulence, all the great persons surrounded and worshipped by all the great personalities of the universe. Seated on his throne, he was surrounded by the Maruts, Vasus, Rudras, Adityas, Ribhus, Vishvadevas, Sadhyas, Ashwini Kumaras, Siddhas, Charanas, and Gandharvas, and by great saintly persons. Also surrounding him were the Vidyadharas, Apsaras, Kinaras, Patagas, birds, and Uragas, snakes. All of them were offering Indra their respects and services, and the Apsaras and Gandharvas were dancing and singing with very sweet musical instruments. Over Indra's head was a white umbrella as effulgent as the full moon, fanned by yak-tail whisks, and served with all the paraphernalia of a great king. Indra was sitting with his wife, whose name is Sati Devi, who occupied half the throne when the great sage Brihaspati appeared in that assembly. Brihaspati, the best of the sages, was the spiritual master of Indra and the demigods, and was respected by the demigods and demons alike. Nevertheless, although Indra saw his spiritual master before him, he did not rise from his own seat or offer a seat to his spiritual master, nor did Indra offer him a respectful welcome. Indra did nothing to show him respect. Brihaspati knew everything that would happen in the future. Seeing Indra's transgression of etiquette, he completely understood that Indra was puffed up by his material opulence. Although able to curse Indra, he did not do so. Instead, he left the assembly and in silence returned to his home. Indra, the king of heaven, could immediately understand his mistake. Realizing he had disrespected his spiritual master, he condemned himself in the presence of all the members of the assembly. "Alas, what a regrettable deed I have committed because of my lack of intelligence and my pride in my material opulences. I failed to show respect to my spiritual master when he entered this assembly, and thus I have insulted him. Although I am king of the demigods who are situated in the mode of goodness, I was proud of a little opulence and polluted by false ego. Under the circumstances, who in this world would accept such riches at the risk of falling down? Alas, I condemn my wealth and opulence." If a person says, one who is situated on the exalted throne of a king should not stand up to show respect to another king or a brahmana, it is to be understood that he does not know the superior religious principles. Leaders who have fallen into ignorance and who mislead people by directing them to the path of destruction, as described in the previous verse, are, in effect, boarding a stone boat, and so too are those who blindly follow them. A stone boat would be unable to float and would sink in the water with its passengers. Similarly, those who mislead people go to hell and their followers go with them. King Indra said, "Therefore, with great frankness and without duplicity, I shall now bow my head at the lotus feet of Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods. Because he is in the mode of goodness, he is fully aware of all knowledge and is the best of the brahmanas. Now I shall touch his lotus feet and offer my obeisances unto him to try to satisfy him." When Indra, the king of the demigods, thought in this way and repented in his own assembly, Brihaspati, the most powerful spiritual master, understood his mind. Thus he became invisible to Indra and left home, for Brihaspati was spiritually more powerful than King Indra. Although Indra searched vigorously with the assistance of other demigods, he could not find Brihaspati. Then Indra thought, Alas, my spiritual master has become dissatisfied with me, and now I have no means of achieving good fortune. Although Indra was surrounded by demigods, he could not find peace of mind. Hearing of the pitiable condition of King Indra, the demons, following the instructions of their guru, Shukracharya, equipped themselves with weapons and declared war against the demigods. The demigods' heads, thighs, and arms, and other parts of their bodies were injured by the sharp arrows of the demons. The demigods, headed by Indra, saw no other course than to immediately approach Lord Brahma with bowed heads for shelter and proper instruction. And the description goes on like this. Recently here I spoke on the topic of devotees, notable devotees, who had disobeyed or gone against the wishes or in some way displeased their gurus, but still they're celebrated as great devotees. Can you think of who I spoke about? See, that was how long ago? 2 weeks ago? Approximately 2 weeks ago. So, who's the obvious one, most famous? Bali Maharaj, yeah. Okay, then? Hriday Chaitanya, you're all living in Tamil Nadu. 18 times. Sri Ramanujacharya. Hriday Chaitanya. Then another one. Hriday Chaitanya's one disciple. There's a Shyamananda. Then Tamal Krishna Maharaj and others who didn't take Srila Prabhupada on parikrama around Govardhan. So those are all narrations of devotees who went against the desire of their guru, but were all glorious for doing so. Although, in the case of Tamal Krishna Maharaj and others, maybe Lokanath Maharaj has a different opinion up to the present day. But they're all glorious, anyway. So I wanted to follow that up by talking about someone who disobeyed or displeased their guru, and it wasn't so very glorious, and to show the example, it's not a normal thing to do. We shouldn't think that because I spoke on that now you have to think how to disobey or displease your guru. Because the standard thing is to please one's guru. I had planned to speak about that just after this, on this topic specifically, just after the talk I gave, but then I decided to get into a marathon to finish this book and I stopped giving classes. And now again I'm giving, I'll start again. And you might think I'm giving it, talking on the topic of guru again today because it just happens to be the birthday of this miserable body that I'm presently in. But it's not so. How many birthdays have we all had? Thinking of Chitraketu and his son. When his son was brought back to life, he said, "Your father, which? Here's your father and mother. Which father? I had so many." And in this lifetime is important because I got my real father. But it's just I was going to speak on this. So now I'll speak on this topic. Guru means heavy. Brihaspati is being really heavy here. If we see the result of what happens by Brihaspati not cursing Indra for Indra's negligence, for Indra's not properly respecting his guru. It was literally a cosmic disaster, because when the news filtered down to the lower planetary systems, and the demons understood that the demigods have now lost the favor of their guru, then they taking help from their guru. They attacked the demigods and overcame them. So it was a cosmic disaster. And why did Brihaspati allow that? Indra immediately understood his mistake and even though it describes he was very puffed up, very proud because of his opulence, immediately he said in front of everyone, "See what a fool I've been." So he became humble. In front of all the people who were respecting him, he openly admitted his fault. He didn't try to hide it. He could have said, "Look, sorry, I have to rush off," and rushed off to Brihaspati's place without telling the others and trying to do it so that he doesn't lose face. But he didn't do that. It seems he was very sincere. I can speculate, that Brihaspati thought that Indra, he needs to learn a lesson, and the precedent has to be set, that you just can't offend your guru and think, "Oh, anyway, I'll go and offer him obeisances. He's a nice guy and he'll let me off. So he's in the mode of goodness, so he won't be angry with me." The precedent should be set. Now, of course, the relationship between Indra and Brihaspati is similar to that of Bali and Shukra. It's the family guru, and it's not exactly a spiritual relationship, because Indra doesn't want a spiritual guru. He's not on the platform of tasmad gurum prapadyeta jignyasu shreya uttamam. Tasmad, this word in this context, tasmad means the verses, therefore, tasmad gurum prapadyeta. One should surrender to a guru and inquire about the highest benefit. That word tasmad comes just after a description of how even in the heavenly planets, even in the higher worlds, there's no happiness. It's all illusory. Having understood that, then one should approach a guru and inquire about the highest good. But Indra himself is in the illusion of wanting to enjoy all. That's what he's doing. He's enjoying the happiness of the heavenly worlds. He doesn't inquire from Brihaspati about Shreya Uttamam. He does according to his own conception of what is Shreya Uttamam, what is the highest goal. But then his conception is wrong. His conception is, "I'm Indra, I'm here, I'll enjoy," and Brihaspati gives us blessings. And not only blessings, but he directs us in performing sacrifices and behaving in such a way, he guides us so that we can retain our position, because the demons are below and they're always trying to, at any opportunity, they'll come up, which is what actually happened here. So it's basically a material relationship. It's not a spiritual relationship. But still the principle applies that by satisfying the guru, one jay prasade pure sarva asha, one's desires are fulfilled. According to the kind of desires we want fulfilled, we go to a different kind of guru. If you want to go to the heavenly planets, then we take a karma kandya guru. And even then he has to be a bona fide guru. If you want to go to hell, we either don't take a guru or take the kind of guru that's been described here, that's like a stone boat for crossing the ocean. We can get that kind of guru. There's an ashram just over the way, right? There's uh, which kind of guru he's called? He's called Sadguru, right? But he's just misusing the term. There are plenty of them, all over India especially. Now there are so many bogus gurus in the West also. India's main export to the Western world is bogus gurus in terms of numbers. But there's they far outnumber in the West than the ones in India. So we gravitate toward the kind of guru that we want according to what we perceive to be the highest benefit. If we are actually fortunate, then we come in contact. Erupe Brahmanda Brahmite Kondo Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. Then we get a guru who gives us the seed of devotional service, the desire to serve Krishna, to surrender to Krishna. But with any guru, at least in the Vedic line, the same principles apply, that the disciple has to surrender and the guru directs for the benefit of the disciple. He may so many things. There are different gurus for teaching. There are gurus for teaching how to fight. There are gurus for teaching music. There are gurus for teaching Ayurveda, astrology, and so many things. The same principle applies in the Vedic culture, because the Vedic process, the Vedic mantras, are very powerful. they're given directly by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the same principle applies. One should be a sincere disciple. That one cannot transgress the orders of the guru or displease him. It just doesn't work. It's a science. Even the Karma Kanda, it's a science. You chant the mantras and you follow all the procedures perfectly and you go to heaven. It works. Maybe not in this age, but in previous ages, it worked. So one should be a sincere disciple. That what is a sincere disciple? Succinctly, that is described by Lord Krishna when he's speaking to his friend Sudama, recording their days in the ashram as disciples of Sandipani Muni. Etad eva hi satchishayar kartavyam guru nishkritam yadvai vishuddha bhavena sarvartatmatmano guru sarvartat Marpanam Guru. The Lord Krishna says that a real disciple, Satshisha, we know the term Sadguru, so Satshisha, the corresponding term, a real disciple, his duty is to understanding his debt to the Guru, which Charanakya Pandit says, if we get even one word of spiritual knowledge from a guru, it's not possible to repay that. Because it's unlimited. It's on the spiritual platform. But the duty of the sincere disciple is to offer himself with Vishuddha Bhava. His duty is to become fully, we can't offer ourselves fully purified without becoming fully purified. So the real thing that we're taking is that we want to fulfill the desire of the guru. The guru, maybe whether it's Karma Kanda guru or whatever, he wants to see, a real guru wants to see his disciple come up and be successful. He'll be very happy to see his disciple even surpass him, as seen to be there with Hriday Chaitanya and Gauri Das, and then later with Shyamananda and Hriday Chaitanya. The guru becomes very happy to see the disciple taking the knowledge from him and taking that up and up and up. So the duty is with pure consciousness to offer himself. Here, artha, the word is used, sarvartha, which can mean all one's money, all one's possessions, but it means all one's, artha, of course, the term has many meanings, including meaning. So to offer all the purposes of one's life, not just to offer oneself, okay, what do you want to do with me? But his desire should be fully in line with that of the guru. That is not possible in the relationship between Brihaspati and Indra. Because Indra he's cultivating material desires. Material desires, of course, Indra is not a demon, but it's in materialistic consciousness, the basic outlook is Ishvaro hamaham bhogi siddho ham balavan sukhi. That I want to enjoy like God. I'll be very happy. Siddhoham. I'm perfect by myself. I don't need any brihaspati. The idea is I'm doing everything by I do everything by my own endeavor. See, be a success. That's the idea. Build yourself up. Personality development. Be a strong man or be a strong woman. Push yourself up. This is the demoniac outlook. Indra's not a demon. But anyone in materialistic consciousness, they partake of that. And when it becomes extreme, then one is called a demon. So Brihaspati is being very, very heavy. Guru means heavy. He knows that he could just forgive Indra and then life would go on as usual. But he's really making a point in a very dramatic way by just leaving. Just left. And then Indra doesn't have his shelter, because Indra is able to maintain his position because he takes shelter from, he has his own prowess, but actually he's sheltered by the prowess of Brihaspati, which is much more powerful, as Vishvamitra, the king, found out when he tried to kill Vasishtha. And then Vishvamitra, with all the different weapons, all the fantastic weapons, they just got eaten up by the stick of Vasishtha, except the Brahmastra. But Vasishtha also nullified that very easily. So it's not the power of the king springs from his protection by the Brahmanas. And if the Brahmanas become dissatisfied with him, then he loses all his position. And that's the same at any level, in all levels of. There are some instances of disciples apparently being strong without taking proper blessings from their guru. Ekalavya is an example. He became expert, but then ultimately he was vanquished. He went on, he thought he was drawing strength from Dronacharya, but illegally. It was avidhi purvakam, not properly. And eventually he was vanquished. So to accept the heaviness of the guru. A heavy means he shouldn't accept any nonsense. In the early days, Srila Prabhupada accepted so much nonsense. In the early days in America, because he was trying to uplift people, had no idea of the culture of respecting gurus. But within a short time, he taught it. But to accept a guru, to be a disciple, it's also very heavy. It means practically one sarvartatmarpanam guru and gives himself fully. It means he has no freedom. He's just like a slave, guru das, dasavanacharam nija. In the Gurukul, the boys, they're supposed to be just a menial servant. You can feel that even one's not directly in the presence of the Guru, but one should feel the order of the Guru is directing me. I have to act according to the order of the Guru, not that because he's not watching me, I can do whatever I like. We should feel I'm always being watched. And actually that's a fact. We are always being watched. Now, nowadays people, they're in big cities like London, there some people are upset because there's mass surveillance. Wherever you go in London, you're on a camera. There's cameras everywhere. And then on your phone, you're being watched, everything you do. So people are upset by that. But it's already going on. There's mass surveillance that Krishna sees everything, Brahma sees everything, Shiva sees everything, Agni sees everything, even inside our own minds. They see everything. So we should feel that, yeah, I'm being watched. Daiva netra, that's called daiva. How do we get different bodies? The karmana daiva netrena jantar deho papateya. According to our karma, we get a different body. How does that happen? That's under the direction of the higher beings who see everything. The daiva netrena. Netrena here means under the direction, but specifically that they're, yeah, that term is used, that gives a sense of their seeing. They know where we are, what our consciousness is, so they direct us accordingly. They give us a certain body according to what we deserve and according to what we desire. So, to be a disciple, it's a very heavy responsibility to accept that now I have to act with control senses. To be a disciple in any discipline means there has to be control senses. You want to study music? Yeah, you ought to control your senses. If you want to, of course, the rock stars, they're the most uncontrolled sense kind of people. But to learn how to play, you have to practice. You have to take the time out. But that discipline, that gives freedom. To give the example of music again, that when one has taken so much training, and it's become the how to play an instrument becomes as if natural, then one can improvise. Then one has the freedom to improvise. But it's freedom within certain parameters, the parameters that are set by the instrument. You can't play piano sounds on a guitar, for instance. Although nowadays you can do everything with a computer. But I'm just giving that as an example. Srila Prabhupada has left our manifest presence. He's not directly visible to us in the same way that he was up to November the 14th, 1977. But we feel his presence pushing us. Get up, Jeev Jago. We can't sleep in the morning. We have to get up. Why? Prabhupada wants us to do. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants us to do. We shouldn't sleep in the lap of the witch of Maya. We work for Krishna. We're getting whipped. There was the Abhiram Thakur had a whip. Anyone he whipped with that would get Krishna Prem. That's the easy process. But otherwise, work hard. But that working hard for Krishna, that is bliss. That is liberating. But it's not an, as Srila Prabhupada often said, Krishna consciousness is not an easygoing life. So by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, he gave us so many tasks, so many things we have to do. There's no opportunity to, if we take the orders of our guru on our head, then there's no opportunity to be lazy. We have to be focused in Krishna's service. Just like to build this temple, you have to watch. Every day, every moment, you have to be focused. The workers can take a holiday, but when they're working, you can't take a holiday. You have to be there, you have to watch every minute. Otherwise, it can be a disaster. 20 years later, the whole thing falls on your head. But though the tasks that he sets, they give us tremendous opportunities. He's by giving us so many services to do, distribute books, make the whole world Krishna conscious, at least make your own area Krishna conscious. Tara e desh, deliver this land. Sets of books in every home. First of all, they had to be translated into all the languages. Now that's done. That was a big task to translate all the books into Tamil. Now again, they're being revised because they need to be revised, the translation. There's so many tasks to do in Krishna's service. So that push is there. A great possibility or opportunity to become fully Krishna conscious by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. But that also leaves the possibility of us not doing that. We can also neglect and make up some idea that Srila Prabhupada is unlimitedly merciful, therefore I don't have to do what he says, and anyway he'll deliver me. That's not mercy. Mercy is his instructions by which we can become purified. So we'll see when we leave this world if we're going to. We'll go very humbly, but we don't want to go with our heads hung in shame that, oh, at the time of death, like Ajamil, he realized, oh, how I wasted my life. I got all good instruction, but I didn't follow it. Of course, we may not be as fallen as Ajamil became, but will we look back and think that, yeah, I tried. But if we go in front of Prabhupada and say, well, you know, I fiddled around, I farted around. There's also the possibility to disappoint Srila Prabhupada. So, how many are going to really try to satisfy Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas, and how many will go with their heads hung in shame with not much to offer? We should consider. Now we got this opportunity. There's the verse is there, Labdva sudurlabhamidam bahusambhavante manusham arthadam anityam api hadir turnam yatet anapatet anumritya yava nishrayasaya vishayakulu sarvata syat. Having got this rare human form of life after many births, one should not waste it, knowing that it is short. One should act in such a manner that one can attain the highest benefit and not waste it in sense gratification, which is available in every form of life. There's another verse by Lord Krishna, similar to that, but which specifically describes the situation of someone who has not only got a human birth, but has attained the shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide guru. Rideham adyang sulabam sudur labam plavan sukalpo guru karna dharam. Mayanukulyena nabasvate ritam puman bhavadin natarit sa atmaha. having got this human life, which is rarely attained after many births. It starts off in the same way as the Labdhva Sudalabham verse. And having the human body is likened to a ship which is capable of crossing over the vast ocean. So having got a ship for crossing the vast ocean, but that's not enough. One needs a proper captain to guide it. So the guru is compared to the captain who knows how to guide the ship over the ocean. And we also need favorable winds. So Krishna's instructions given in Shastra, they're like favorable winds. And if one has all these facilities but still fails by his own foolishness or negligence to cross the ocean, Krishna says such a person, they are killing themselves. Atmaha. They're not just killing the body, but they're killing their own spiritual opportunity. These are very heavy topics. It's not a small thing to have a guru. So we're very fortunate if we can feel the weight of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet pressing the whole weight of the spiritual world. Ananta holds the whole material planets, but at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, he's the representative of all the demigods, representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what he's carrying is even heavier than what Ananta carries. It's the spiritual weight. So we can feel that on that from above us, but this weight, it doesn't press us down. By taking that great weight, by accepting that, the weight of his instructions, then he pulls us up to the spiritual world. Or if we hold on to his lotus feet, then he'll take us to the spiritual world. It's very heavy, but very blissful, and everything else is useless. But we should consider also how serious it is to accept a guru and how serious it is to be a disciple. One other thing came to mind while I was reading this is that we see that Indra, he gets some really... he gets in trouble from time to time and gets some really heavy reactions, but he picks himself up and goes on again. What's that called? Self-confidence or resilience in the face of distress. We find that with so many personalities described in Shastra, Prahlad is maybe the greatest exemplar of that. If any adult should be mentally disturbed throughout life, it should have been Prahlad. He had the worst child abuse in history. Unprecedented. Nabhuto nabhavishyati. Well, I hope it doesn't happen in future. Well, the thing is that anyone else would have died, but he went through that and he wasn't disturbed. He didn't have PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, in which people just used to be called shell shock, where people are in a war, and then after the war they wake up in the middle of the night with nightmares, or even in the daytime they feel very nervous and. But Prahlad didn't have that. He was peaceful by nature. And in the Vedic literature, we find many people who suffer in many ways, but we don't find that they have this resentfulness or mental imbalance due to having suffered and seen so many bad things. Some years ago, I asked one of my disciples, who was previously a colonel in the Indian Army, and who had served during Operation Blue Star in the 1970s, which resulted in a lot of destruction, a lot of death. It was the destruction by the Indian Army of the Golden Temple in Amritsar and killing lots of people because there were so many terrorists or militants holed up inside. So I said to him that, you see, in the Western countries, you find that when people go through something like that, they see so much death and suffering, they tend to be psychologically scarred for life. But I see you and I see so many others, they just go on with life. And it seems to be in India, people, they don't have that kind of syndrome. And I was in Bangladesh shortly after the whole country had been through terrible genocide or attempted genocide by the Pakistani army, and so many bad things, horrible things they were doing. Just, you can't say they were like animals because it's much worse than animals. But the people were just going on with life. You didn't see lots of people going around with severely mentally disturbed. So I asked him, how is that? And what do you think? What's the reason that people don't get so disturbed like that in India, in these countries, whereas in the West, it's very common that people get so much disturbed by the horrible things they see, but Indian people seem to be able to live with that and go on. And his reply was that he says because people believe in God. Of course, people believe in God in the Western world also, but it's seems to be deeply in the culture, even in the among the Muslims. That I thought about that, and I thought it's maybe a little deeper that. Because people know, they may not have studied Shastra or any such thing, but they have a general understanding that we get what we deserve from what we've done in previous lives, and this is only one life. I may suffer in this life. If I suffer, then that's ordained by a higher authority. Kismat, the word is commonly, that's a Muslim word, you can say. Urdu word. It's fate. We have to take it. And then time, we're going on. Eternal time, we hear in the Puranas. This ages and ages. Our whole life is just like a little kshanik. Kshanabhangura, that word is used in the Bhagavatam. The life is just like a flash. So why should we lament? That's, of course, the first teaching of Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? What is that? Tasmada parihariyarte natvam shochitam arhasi. Why should we lament? There's so many teachings are there to be taken. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? No. So, we'll finish. Śrīla Prabhupāda kī jai. Vāñcā kalpatarūpyascha kṛpā sindhubhyo eva ca patitānām pāvanebhyo vaiṣṇavebhyo namo namah.
Solinus Bhakti Vikas Maharaj ki
jai.